This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast and radio program presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Most any contemporary musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of the blues.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up and down these Michigan roads, yeah.
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Baby, I'm home.
Thank you so much, Parker. I'm your host, Jim Irvin, and this is Time Signatures. Today's guest has been described as a petite powerhouse by Blues Blast magazine. She has also been called a tiny, beautiful woman with a deep voice and just the right amount of rasp to her singing. This blues woman understands the dynamics of performance, which builds solid connections with those attending her shows, seemingly portraying the impression that she is seeing and singing directly to each member of the audience individually. Drawing her inspiration from the likes of Denise LaSalle, Betty LaVette, Janis Joplin, and Tina Turner, she has a unique sound you won't soon forget when you see her in action. And you better not overlook her, because you're going to be blown away. Ladies and gentlemen, from Gulf Coast Records, it gives me great pride to welcome the one and only Kat Riggins to Time Signatures. What an honor. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you, Jim. I appreciate you. Thank you for having me.
It is an honor to have you. I love having women of the blues because we don't get enough of them on the show. And every time I get a member of the women of the blues, it's an honor to me, a special honor. So thank you very much for coming.
That's fantastic. I love hearing that.
All right. Well, I suppose the best way to get this ball rolling is to talk about those early years. Kat, what are your earliest memories of music?
My mom, my sister and I, we would... My mom had this, and my dad, but mostly it was my mom's. They had this collection of music that was so vast. We would be singing, I say it a lot, we'd be singing along to Chuck Berry 1 minute, Tracy Chapman the next, and then we'd be singing gospel in another moment, Salt and Pepper the next second. So we were all over the place musically, but there was always music playing in my house when I was growing up. And I feel like the saturation of it kind of became necessary for me. It's like air for me. I need the music in my life, and I feel like it is because I grew up with it.
Yeah, it definitely. And I completely can relate to that. Now, as I was researching you for this interview, I read that at the age of 7 or so, your grandmother decided to put you and your siblings and cousins into music lessons. Talk about that period for just a moment.
Oh, that was horrible. Well, for me, a couple of my cousins, you know, thrived. I don't know. I went to piano lessons for 2 weeks because my grandmother had a piano in her house. And we were all a very musical family. We sang just at the drop of a dime. We would harmonize about anything. But my grandmother gifted us music lessons, and mine didn't take because I'm very sensitive, and I have always been a very sensitive soul. But my piano teacher was one of those very strict kind of people, and that this was back in the days when they could smack you on the hands with a ruler. So I lasted maybe 2 weeks, and that was it for me.
So you credit your mother's wide variety of music with your exposure to the blues, and some of the aforementioned female singers that I mentioned earlier in the episode. But your voice, even at the age of 7 or 8, was deeper and raspier than most children, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I was teased about it often. And of course, you know, people say kids can be cruel, and I feel like, it's a matter of cruelty because they have no filter, you know. They don't know that they're not being kind most of the time, and sometimes they can, you know, be, you know, little jerks. But I used to get teased about my voice. The kids used to ask me why I sound like a man. So at that young age, I didn't really have the confidence in my voice that I have now, because then everybody had these clear as bell voices that were on the radio then, and the people that my friends were listening to. But then I'd get home and hear Denise LaSalle or Betty Wright or, you know, Coco Taylor or Tracy Chapman, and I'd hear those voices and be, I would feel held, you know, like comforted from being picked on at school. It's like, oh, come here, baby. It's okay. It's all right. It's all right. You'll get it. You know, so those voices did that. Those voices embraced me when I felt different or too loud or too much, you know, too strong. Sure. So, kids can be cruel.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. How did you overcome that period of angst? And rumor has it your father gave you the most important piece of advice of all regarding your voice, didn't he?
Yes, absolutely. Wow, Jim, you know your stuff.
I try to do my homework.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's the answer that I would give is it's my dad. I mean, our entire family is supportive of everything. We've always been told that we could do whatever we want as long as we, you know, put our minds to it and make the effort. God will bless your efforts. That's always what we've been told. But faith without works is dead. So we always, you know, push hard, work hard, push through. And we're always being encouraged. But I remember specifically what kind of turned around my thinking about my own voice is when I was trying to get this song that I was assigned to sing at a pageant in the seventh grade. So I was 12 or 13. And I'm in my room, doors closed, and I'm struggling through this Whitney Houston song. Mm-hmm. And okay, first of all, Whitney Houston with this. So I'm struggling through this song. And there's this light knock on the bedroom door, and my dad opens the door and he says, listen, I'm gonna say this and then I'm gonna leave you alone and let you do your thing. But Whitney Houston already has Whitney Houston covered. Your voice alone is special. And then he walked out the door just like he said he would. And at 13 or however old I was, I remember being at first annoyed by that because it didn't help in the moment, but when I sat with it, I heard it.
And then that light switch went, right?
Yes, yes. And then I could let myself out of my face. You know, my own voice and sing that song the way that I would sing that song. And it made me feel more powerful. It made me feel more comfortable in myself. And that gave me, I guess, the permission to just be me, to use my voice, because it was meant for me. Whitney's was meant for her. Janet Jackson's was made for her. You know, Denise LaSalle's was made for her. Mine is mine.
You know, I wish more people, not just in the blues, but more people in music in general would get that, because especially in the blues, you get people that are constantly wanting to do, you know, Sweet Home Chicago or The Thrill Is Gone or whatever. And they want to do it in that style of the singer. That's great. I mean, you know, but be yourself, man. And what a powerful moment in your life. That's incredible.
Now, it was pivotal. It really turned everything around about the way I thought about moving in this world, you know, about trying to give people what I think they want, as opposed to what I should have been doing was just being me and have people receive it however they receive it.
Right, right. Now, in an interview that I read recently, you talked about earning the respect of other musicians and fighting stereotypes in order to be taken seriously as a band leader. Talk about that for me, would you, Kat?
Yes, that was... And every once in a while, it still comes up, but not so much these days. I've been in this business for a while, but in the beginning, when I first especially started doing blues full time and fronting my own band, and I'm small, you know, so not only am I a woman, but I'm small.
Right.
So my stature, I guess, kind of made people misjudge me. So I would have venues or bookers going straight to my guitar player and, you know, attempting to pay him, or people going over my head to ask, when I was doing my own booking, to book Kat Riggins. And you know, I remember when I was being booked by Jim Nestor a while ago, so he was asked by a venue, a promoter, something. And he said, ask boss lady. He would always defer to me. Same thing with my guitar players. It just took some work. You know, it took me
sure
paying extra dues as a woman. We have to do that, you know. And then I'm not going to sugarcoat it. There's a Tracy Chapman song that says, tell it like it is. Yes, women in this business have had a history of having to work twice as hard, having to show up bigger, and having to kind of be a little bit more nurturing with our speech, mm-hmm. when we mean the same thing that a man means. So me having this bass in my voice sometimes is misread or misheard or misreceived as, you know, bitchy or diva-ish.
You have no idea how many times I've heard women that I've interviewed say the very same thing.
Yeah, it's a thing. It is a thing, you know, and that's why I can't say that it doesn't exist, because it has happened to me. But the great thing is that it doesn't happen so much anymore. And I'm not validating people's behavior.
Right.
I'm just saying that there is a level of you shouldn't assume. There's a level of, there's protocol when it comes to a band, especially if a woman is in front. The assumptions that people make kind of take us back a few years. And the fact that we might not be considered first or second for a position on a major festival, it takes us back and back and back. So the fact that there are venues and promoters and festivals that are hiring women on and intentionally doing what you do, which is shining light on women in blues and making sure to keep us lifted up. There are people like you, there are people in power like you who are doing that, and that is bringing us into the now and into the future. So that's appreciated. So thank you for that.
It is my pleasure. Now, I have to tell you, when I was reading about the venue owners walking past you to hand the check to the guitar player before being corrected, I had to laugh a little bit, because I interviewed Ruthie Foster for the premiere episode for season 5 just a few weeks ago. And she told me about similar instances early on, but she shared with me that she carries herself as if she knows she belongs in the room. And if she needs to correct someone that is treating her incorrectly or with any measure of dismissal, she's not hesitant about setting their ass straight. Does any of that sound familiar?
Absolutely. It's just, I feel like a lot of us, this is the choir, we're singing the same song.
Right.
You know, so more people are hearing it. So that's good. And people are joining in. So eventually, you know, maybe we can change the tune. Maybe it won't be relevant anymore.
Well, and it needs to change. It absolutely needs to change. Now, I'm going to flip the page here. A few years ago, you joined Gulf Coast Records. How did that come about, and how's it going now?
It started with my late booking agent, Jim.
Okay.
And talking and him pushing things out, and then Albert got signed, Albert Castilla, and he's always been very supportive of me. We're both from Miami. Well, he's raised in Miami. We're both raised in Miami, and we connect with that. And he's always, since I moved back to South Florida, he has always treated me kind of like a little sister, and I'm grateful for that. So every time I'm in a room with him, he makes sure that he shines light on me. And what I heard later on is that that's what he did with Gulf Coast Records. He started talking to Mike and Guy about, have you heard about this girl called Kat Riggins? And then, you know, encouraged them to listen to my stuff, and they liked my stuff, and, you know, and then they contacted me. So we started to talk. The conversation was being had a long time before the announcement was made. And we were even in the studio a while before the announcement was made. But long story short, it had a lot to do with people in my corner talking me up.
Very cool. Your records have addressed social injustice, spirituality, and a host of other introspective themes. How do you feel your writing has matured? And we're going to talk about your new album in just a moment. But how do you feel like your writing has matured since you first set out on this path?
I feel like, you know, every year that goes by, I grow less and less uncomfortable with making people uncomfortable. And that is obvious if you listen to my discography chronologically. You can hear that in my approach to the music, in my approach to what I want to say, and my approach to the music itself, to the blues. You know, in the beginning, yes, I was writing, always write things that I want people to feel, right? Even if it's just in your hips. But I want you to think something. I want you to feel something. I want you to be moved in some way. So the lyrics have always been kind of poems turned to music. But the music, I was a bit more shy about. I love the blues, and I wanted to do the blues, and I know that. But I started off kind of fusing it with other things and trying to be sneaky with it and feel people out. See if they would receive me with it. Then little by little, it just became more of a need for me to do it more boldly. So musically, the approach has changed. Lyrically, the approach has changed because I'm less, I kind of say things a little less sugarcoated now.
You remind me of a female version of Taranzo Cannon. How's that?
I love it. Taranzo and I were just talking about writing too. So that's really cool. And and he writes a lot. Like, I love his writing too. And we were discussing this. But yep. Yeah, it's the same thing. Same kind of sentimentality.
Yeah.
If it's got to be said and I'm inspired to say it, then I just say it. And you receive it how you're going to receive it. And it's not personal to me.
That is very similar to what he said about his new album. That's all I'm going to say. It's cool. I mean, you guys seem that you're very much akin in that way.
Yeah, he's really like, yeah, I feel like in a lot of ways, especially in the writing, we do, yes, have a lot in common. With this album, though, this was different. The way I wrote this album, I usually...
Oh, no, you got to wait a minute. I'm not going to let you talk about it yet. You got to wait a minute. Because I want to follow that theme about feeling, because one of the things that I like about music is if it makes me feel. And I have to ask you about your song Mama. You and I have something in common, something more in common. Yeah.
Yeah.
I lost my mom just over 3 years ago. And something that I do when I prepare an interview is to immerse myself in the music of the artist. So I've heard your music, trust me. I took a break to listen to this song in particular because you talked about it in your interview, and I was moved, like I had not been moved in a long time. And as I was reading your interview about the song, I knew I had to hear your story about that session in the studio, and then about your decision to reclaim the month of May as your own, as you put it. Floor is yours. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oof, that song was tough to record.
I can only imagine. I'm getting teary thinking about this.
It's coming back to me now. It really is. The flood of emotions is all coming back to me now, just thinking about it. When I wrote it, I just wrote it to get it out of my head. I wrote it to get it out of my body. And it was just that. It was just to just not have it in me anymore, taking up the space that it did. My mom's been gone for over 20 years now.
Oh, wow.
But sometimes it's still fresh.
Yeah.
And I get through it every day by remembering all the great stuff. And then if I need to, I let myself go through the roughness of it when it does, because it's waves, you know? And when it comes back, then I allow myself to feel that. But in this moment, it was like tsunamis, like bump a wave. It was... So I needed to write it and let it out. And my wife thought it should be a song. And in the studio, we recorded the music. I recorded the scratch vocal. Some of what they used in the recording is scratch vocal. But then they left me alone in the studio and just let me wail. And I used the whole room and kind of forgot about the microphone there. So that's why it's kind of imperfect in the balance, the sound balance. It's a bit imperfect because I'm just kind of screaming at the walls. And there's one point where I'm catching my breath towards the end, and Mike left that part. And listening back to it, it sent me to a different place because... It did take everything out of me, you know, to record that song. So, and I still have never, and I don't think I'll ever perform that song live.
Understood. I'm sorry. I had to hear the story because...
No, don't apologize. This is what this is about.
Yeah,
this is what this is about. And when I write about it, if I put it out, I expect there's going to be questions asked about it, so I'm more than happy to answer those questions.
Sure.
and I want people to know where the music comes from, but I also want people to be able to receive it and make it relate and relate to it in their own way, so
yes.
You know, and they have, for them it feels completely different, for them it feels authentic, and that's, you know, the goal of the music is for people to get their own healing out of it according to their situations.
Yes, I understand that completely. Greater Boston Music Review said this about you. There are two types of music listeners in the world, those who are fans of Kat Riggins and those who have never heard of her. Is it safe to say that since that was written around 2023 that more listeners in the world have become fans of Kat Riggins?
Yes, thank God. Yes, it is. And I'm so grateful for it. The reach that I've been allowed is literally a dream come true. It's a prayer come true. When I feel, I talk about God all day. I talk about faith all day. I don't care. When I say that the things that I've asked for out loud, I've been able to see and am still, you know, realizing in real time, this is for real. So absolutely, it's safe to say that, and I don't take it for granted.
I have to tell you, I love the fact that you incorporate some spirituality in your albums. It caught me off guard the first time I heard it, and then I noticed that theme was kind of woven through the album as I was listening to it. Stay fearless with that, because, I mean, the music that you're putting out there is genuine, and I think that's what we don't have enough of. Not just in our genre, but in the music in general, the music world. Now, let's talk about music. Let's talk about your new album. It's called Revival. And from the looks of it, your record seems to be more of the natural progression of your musical style. And you are not just listed as Kat Riggins, but it's Kat Riggins and her blues revival. That's another theme that you seem to be carrying along here. So talk about this album for a moment.
Absolutely, I'd love to. I'm so
proud. I knew you
would. I'm so proud of this one. We wanted to have fun with it, and we wanted other people to have fun with it. We wanted to put it on and boogie. We wanted to take the listener through every facet of the blues, every shade of blue in the blues. We wanted to celebrate that. So you have your, you know, you got some acoustic blues, you got your rocking, hard driving blues, you got slow blues, you got R&B, soul blues, you know, gospel shout blues. It's, I mean, the album is drenched in blue, but functified, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you're talking about
because I listened to it.
You know, I love it. It was the process of making this one was different for me because normally when I write and I record because I don't play any instruments. I'll record the lyrics and the melody into my voice recorder. And if I have a horn part or a bass line or something that I hear, I will sing that into the voice recorder and send that to the producer that I'm trusting with the project at the time. And that person will compile the music around the lyrics and the melody. Normally, in this case, the genius that is Tim Mulberry, he inspired me to elevate my game, to grow a little, to stretch a little and challenge myself. And I'm glad that we did it this way because now I know that I can. So this time, a lot of the songs, he came to me with the hook. He's like, I call him the jingle genie. He is a hook hero. He knows how to write a chorus. Okay. And yeah, he's fantastic. So he came to me with the hook and he says, can you do something with this? And I'd listen and write the verses in and the bridge in, things like that. And we'd build a song like that. Or wow. He would come to me, right. He'd come to me with, the chorus and an idea like, okay, so for this, we were thinking kind of this kind of attitude, you know, like take it here. And then I'd write. I never worked like that before. I never wrote in the studio before like that. I always write. Everything's prepared before I go to the studio because it's paid by the hour. So you want to be prepared and rehearsed. But in this case, it was very organic and fun because it was new. And the stuff that we came up with still had a message and lyricism, intentionality. I love that, especially when it comes to the blues, when it's not just kind of traditional, basic lyrics that say something and then just leave it alone. I want to get into the depth of the story. We got the beginning, the middle, and the end, but I want y'all to feel like the in-betweens, and that's what we did with this album. And the, oh my gosh, the musicality in this album, the background vocals, so much color. Because I'm so excited about it. I love this album, and it is a House of Berry project. This one is not a Gulf Coast Records project. This one is by Tim. I did this individually because I'm on the schedule this year for a Gulf Coast, but you know, I had this album in me for 2024, and Mike said, Kat, if you got it in you and you can let it out, go ahead, do what you gotta do, girl. So I'm grateful that he was gracious.
Indeed.
And, you know, because they could have shut it down as a label and they didn't shut it down. They allowed me to put it out and it's received some accolades and recognition and it is now up for Grammy consideration for nomination.
Wow, so nice.
Fingers, toes crossed, prayers said that somebody in the Recording Academy, you know, likes what they hear and, you know, helps us to become nominated.
Wonderful. All right, it's your time to shine, girl. Where can we send people to learn more about Kat Riggins, maybe buy some CDs or merch, or book you for a gig?
Well, you can book me because I'm already ready. I'm already packed. It doesn't matter where in the world you want some high energy, down home, raw and rowdy blues. You can contact houseofberry.com. Philip Lilly is the booking manager over there, and he is ready and waiting, pen and paper in hand, to get us going. But if you just want to check us out and find out a little bit more about me, you can go to katriggins.com. That's my website. Everything is up there. If you are a social media aficionado, I am on Instagram at Kat Riggins. I'm on Facebook at Kat Riggins Music. And I also have a new YouTube page. It's Kat Riggins and Her Blues Revival. Go ahead and subscribe and follow and all of that good stuff.
I will do that. I promise. Kat Riggins, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate you taking time to join us today on Time Signatures. All the best to you and to your wife. Safe travels as you tour. And if you hit Michigan, let me know. And I promise you, I'll come out there with my camera. I'm a photographer as well. Would love to come out and show support for you. And thank you so much once again.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I can't wait to see you in Michigan.
And that wraps up this edition of Time Signatures. Once again, my thanks to our guest, Kat Riggins, but also to you, because without you, none of this would be possible. Jim Irvin reminding you that keeping the blues alive is everyone's responsibility, but preserving the history of the blues one story at a time, that's my mission. Until next time, so long, everybody.
This has been Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. For more information on cabs, visit capitalareablues.org. You can find this episode and past episodes at lccconnect.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up in
Until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.